So, Jeff, you've got the floor.
Thank you, Alan. I appreciate it. I am a proud and grateful member of the Tuesday Night Lafayette group. Although right now I'm in Boca Raton, Florida, visiting my mother-in-law. My father-in-law, her husband of 67 years, died from COVID in May. And my wife and I are now the first of her family to be able to visit. She's gone all these months without any family being able to visit. But since my wife and I both had our two shots, we were able to be the first one. So I'm really grateful to be here and happy to be talking to you guys. I'm going to talk about something I've talked about in my home group, and because I hope it's something that people can relate to, particularly in this day and age with so much going on, so much uncertainty, and so much fear. And that's what I want to talk about, fear. But a little bit first, my background for those people who don't know me at all. I first came to Al-Anon because my daughter is an alcoholic and an addict who was clean and sober for 2 years and then started drinking again and then started doing coke again and then moved from coke to meth. So it's been very hard and very painful. And being in this group, having the support of everyone in Al-Anon has been amazing. My father was a functional alcoholic who split when I was about 18 months old and left me with that you are unlovable feeling inside. I saw him several times in my life. I saw him when I was 9. I hunted him down when I was 16. I spent some time with him when I was 18 and also at 21. And we seemed to have a pretty good time together. I thought he was a fascist politically, but we still got along and we listened to each other and had respect for one another. We had a good time together. One of my strong memories of that time was playing chess all night because I kept beating him and he wouldn't quit until he won a game. And so it's going on to 2 a.m., 3 a.m., 4 a.m., and the cigarette butts are piling up in the ashtray in front of him and the beer cans are stacking up next to the chessboard. But unlike in the, you know, in the Queen's Gambit, when she did drugs, she was able to see the board and the moves very clearly. Well, the Rainier Ale did nothing for my father. And we ended up playing chess all night long. So we had good times together. But then I came to realize at one point that all of our get-togethers were at my initiation. And that began to hurt. And then I thought, and he's never even sent me a birthday card. So I went through a period of hating the man. And I wrote him the grandfather of all I hate you letters. It was a pretty good one. And everything I said was true. And he actually got back to me in a pretty positive way and said, you know what? You're right. I was not able to be a father. I'm sorry for all those things that I didn't do for you. But you know what? You got to get over it. And that was the best advice he ever gave me. You got to get over it. And finally, I did begin to get over it and forgive him for everything. And he met my wife. He met my daughter when she was a little girl. And I called him about once a year, and then he killed himself, committed suicide. And so I went into another period of anger, but through Al-Anon, I was able to forgive him for that. as well, and also hope that he could forgive me for never really understanding that alcoholism was standing in the way of his ever being a father. I never wanted to deal with that. I just wanted to think, you're an asshole. I want to think you're an asshole. And that's that, as opposed to, God, you have a disease that is keeping you from being the father that I want you to be. So anyway, and at the same time, I was growing up very close to my mom, single parent, who I came to understand pretty clearly that I was the reason for her happiness in life or unhappiness. And that remained true as she remarried, as she had my brother, who I love, to of course, a different father. Through all of that, I still had a sense that her happiness was based upon me. And so, and I spent a lot of time either accepting that or rebelling against that. But no matter what it was, whether it was acceptance or rebellion, if I was okay, if I was pissed off, it always just seemed like the truth to me that her being okay in the world was sort of my business. And I began to see us as enmeshed in a way that I have been attempting to pull myself out of all my life. I mean, we're still close. I call her once a week, but I have to admit that when she's 83, and I'm 64, when she passes, somebody
please wait,
turn their mic off. Thank you. When she passes, I am going to simultaneously feel a great amount of relief for not having to be responsible for someone's happiness, but also almost empty, as though her existence and my existence were so tied together that once she ceases to be, I have no reason to exist. So that's some pretty big stuff to be dealing with. And Al-Anon helps me to do that, to pull away from that and go, wait a second, no, you are not. Even if she thinks you are responsible for her happiness, you don't have to think that. And that's a hard one for me, but I have been trying to, you know, to deal with that. But as you can imagine, having the father who split, saying basically you're unlovable, or at least that's how I perceived it, and a mother who I desperately needed her love, but also felt smothered by it, you know, what a recipe for crappy relationship, or an inability to be intimate in a significant way. Although I will have to say that I've been married 2 weeks ago. We were married 33 years. My wife has these role models of 67 years of marriage, her parents. So, you know, I plug along, but still have a hard time loving. And now this gets to the fear. And it's because of my father's alcoholism and so forth, and that I have lived a lot of my life based upon fear. And I realized that, oh gosh, I don't know, about 6 months ago, I was looking at my son. He's 24. He lives with us. He came home to live with us after college and has been kind of hard to get going, hard to get motivated to get out there on his own. And he was sitting there and I looked across at him and I was flooded with love, this feeling of love, like, my God, how can I love someone as much as I love him? And I sat with that feeling for about 10 seconds. And then it was, fuck that. This is too scary. I don't want to love anybody that much. What if he gets hit by a car tomorrow? What if something happens to him? I won't even want to live, but I'll have to live because I promised my wife that I wouldn't go my father's route. I promised her that I would never take my own life. Now, to a lot of you, that may seem kind of weird. Why? That's a weird promise to make, to not take your own life. But with my history on my side of the family of depression and my father killing himself, it was a really legitimate promise to make and a very significant one, that I would never take my own life. And so my thought was, so if anything happened to my son, I would have to live with it. I'd have to deal with it. And damn, I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that. I don't want to love anybody that much. But I struggle with that. And I tell him I love him all the time. And I give him a hug every day. And I have set boundaries with him, which I'll get to later at the end of my talk. By the way, can somebody maybe, do we have a timekeeper? Owen, are you or somebody? Can somebody maybe go like this with about 5 minutes? Or, you know?
I'll give you the 5 minutes.
Okay.
5 minutes, yeah.
Cool. But in that happening with him, feeling that way with my son, got me thinking to ways that fear has impacted my life, like the fear of getting close to, too close to somebody for fear they'll leave or something will happen. So never really loving fully. And, you know, I think my wife thinks that I love her enough, but not as much as I could. And that's unfortunate. I was afraid of being rejected, so I never played around as much as I wanted to when I was younger. Afraid of being alone, so I was never too long out of a relationship. But I was also afraid to hurt any partner's feelings, even when I wanted out. And so I just acted like a passive aggressive jerk until they were the ones to end the relationship. So I didn't have the guts. I was too afraid to do that. I was really afraid before I had kids that I wouldn't be a good dad. And the way that manifested itself was interesting. I was terrified that I was going to drop my child, my baby, going down the stairs from our two-story house. That's how that fear of being a dad came to me. I'm going to drop my kid. I'm going to slip on the stairs. I was afraid of not being a good enough teacher. I was a teacher for 33 years, so I worked my ass off. I spent more time trying to be a good teacher than trying to be a good parent, because I wanted the love and the admiration. I wanted those kids to walk out of my class all the time going, God damn, did that just happen? Was that just a classroom where we experienced that? But a lot of that was based upon, well, needing ego gratification, that I was going to be the best teacher anyone had ever had, but also the fear that I was not going to be the best. I was afraid to say no to my kids a lot of the times, like when they would go, oh, let's go to 7-Eleven, get a Slurpee and some chips. And I'd be, you know what? We've done that twice this week. I don't want to do that, but I didn't want to be the bad guy. They wouldn't love me enough if they didn't get their Slurpee and chips. I mean, what bullshit is that? But that's kind of how I saw it. I was afraid to tell my mom when my mom was going through menopause and was being pretty mean to my wife. I was afraid to tell her, cut it out. You need to be nice to my wife. But I wouldn't do that because I was afraid, oh, how will my mom take that? And her life is miserable and my wife's life is good, and so I'm not going to go there. I was afraid to really fully come down on my wife's side when we were dealing with my daughter's drug abuse at the beginning, because I didn't want to be the bad guy. I've always been really good at letting my wife be the one to set the boundaries and be the bad guy if there was going to be one. I wanted to be the good guy. Afraid to tell the truth, tell little white lies in a million different ways to my wife. Like if she asked me to call somebody and I hadn't done it, I'd go, yeah, I did it. And then I'd make the call the next day or if I wanted to get something and I thought I was going to have to negotiate it out with her and I didn't want to do that, I would just go buy it and make up some shit. It was not honest because I was afraid to be honest that she would be mad. I was trying to control. Somebody mentioned control earlier. Fear, I think losing control is the ultimate fear. And I think I could look back on everything I just mentioned to you guys about things that I was afraid of. And a lot of that was about not having control over people and outcomes and beliefs. And so being courageous enough to not be in control is something that I have had to work on a lot. And that's what I've been trying to do. I mean, I still have a hard time setting boundaries with my kids, and I still act out of fear sometimes. I am afraid every day that I'm going to get the call that she's overdosed, or she's been in a car accident, or she's in jail, which would, of course, that would be okay. That might be the best thing to happen to her. Maybe that will be hitting bottom. But I fear those others every day, and so I want to rescue her. I went to my sponsor a number of months ago and said, she's lonely because of COVID. She hasn't been able to come over here to our house. She hasn't been able to see friend, and I think maybe she could stop using for a while if I went and stayed with her. And so my wife and I actually talked about my going and living with her. And so I talked to my sponsor and he said, oh, okay. So when you go over there, are you going to wear your Superman costume or your street clothes? And I was hoping that would be the response. I knew that would be the response. You know, my wife had said, I think that's a terrible idea, but if it's what you need to do, you need to do it. I was afraid that I was going to lose her. I've been afraid to come down and really, I don't know, really come kind of get in my son's face about how he needs to make some decisions about his life. And I haven't wanted to do that because I haven't wanted him to feel bad about himself. And so then ultimately, if I've made him feel bad about himself, then ultimately he might not feel good about me. So it comes back to how it relates to me and how I don't want to be the bad guy. So I just look back at all these ways that I've let fear in my life dictate a lot of how I have been, and all of the emotion that I've let that fear rob me of and make it so that I am less alive. Because if you're not feeling emotions, you're not really alive. And that has been one thing that Al-Anon has, that I've been working on. And slowly, I didn't go to my daughter's house. And even though I have fear every day that I might get a call, I still try to be happy and have a good day. And still try to really absorb the three C's. Cause, cure, control. None of them. So those are things that I would not have been able to do without this program. My wife and I actually gave my son the ultimatum. We told him, you have until May 1st to live here. And that was one of the hardest things I had ever done. And yet, you know what? You guys could probably guess. And he has really started looking, doing the job search, redoing his resume, talking to recruiters. He has smoked. He's been addicted to weed. And it has, you know, weed is a motivation killer. It's certainly not as dangerous as the other drugs, but it kills motivation, really.
You got 1 minute, Jeff.
How much?
One minute.
Okay, really effectively. But he stopped. He has stopped smoking weed. He's taking care of his health. He's eating right. He's even talking about moving back to San Diego, where he graduated college. And at first, that was a shot through my heart. Like, oh my God, we wanted him to get going like he's doing, but we didn't want him to move out of town. Well, you may get what you ask for, right? And it would be wonderful if he moved away from us to be on his own. Oh, that I could never have done without this program. And when my wife and I went up to the Pacific Northwest last year, I actually did some research, a lot of calling, trying to find out where my father had been either cremated or buried. Because if he'd been buried, I wanted to go to his gravesite and say goodbye in a way that I never did, and forgive him and ask him to forgive me for never being more understanding about his disease. So successes, little successes. I'm moving slowly. And sometimes I think, oh my God, have I gotten anything out of this program? I'm acting so codependent. And then I go, okay, but look at the successes. Look at what you've done that you couldn't have done before, that I never would have without the wonderful people that I also turned my back on for 6 months when COVID happened. I stopped coming to the meeting, but I think I'm kind of an example of not giving up, that I came back, and I'm going to be back to stay because it's so powerful and is so in line with how I want to live my life and how I want to be people, how I want to deal with all that fear. I think 12 steps and program are a wonderful thing to deal with the fear that keeps us paralyzed in life. So thank you.
Thank you, Jeff.